You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. I'm talking to the story editor of Doctor Who on TV, who is now the writer of a new Who comic for the American market. Gary Russell has written and directed Doctor Who radio plays, animation and novels, but we're concentrating on his writing for the new IDW comic. His illustrated stories in Doctor Who magazine, or DWM for short, and his weekly strip in the Radio Times, which followed the broadcast of the Paul McGann TV movie in 1996. Also, we'll be talking about our favourite Who comics and artists. I read in an interview that basically IDW just got in touch with you to say, can you write our Doctor Who comic? Was it as simple as that?
To say they wanted a license to do Doctor Who, and during the course of that, I think somebody somewhere must have said to them, you know, Gary would be really good at writing that.
Right.
Which is very nice of them. And then the next thing I knew, I was talking to Chris Royal, who's the managing editor at IDW, and he was in the country, and we met up, and I met up with him and Nick Roche, who was the artist, and we had coffee, and we all got on like a house on fire. Suddenly I was doing it.
Excellent. Had Chris read any of your previous Doctor Who work?
I have no idea, to be honest with you. I suspect not. I don't think Chris is... I think Chris likes Doctor Who a lot. Mm. I don't think he's particularly versed in the background and the stuff. I think it was more a case of enough people probably said to him, yes, this guy's an absolute nightmare and a terrible writer and appalling, but you know what? You could do a lot worse.
Okay.
That's what I like to think, anyway. I mean, actually, no, I like to think they said... this guy's a genius and the best writer in the whole history of Doctor Who. But you know what? I don't think they did.
I mean, IDW in particular seems to have a great fondness for British culture. The fact they're doing a Transformers...
I would say instrumental in, but I was... when it first came up that it was going to be IDW, and most people around the BBC didn't know what IDW was, and I did. And I was very much championing them, saying they are a brilliant comic company, and their CSI stuff was magnificent.
Hmm.
And they were doing Spike, I think, at the time as well, and I loved that. They hadn't started the Star Trek stuff, I don't think. But I was really championing them because I just believe they're a really good company. They're the sort of company that you want to see get a Doctor Who license, and much as I love Marvel and DC, if someone like them had come up with that license, I think we would have been lost.
Hmm.
You know, really, really so unimportant. And I knew that with someone like IDW, Doctor Who would get treated the way it deserved to be treated.
Well, considering the respect that they've treated Tank Girl, for example.
Yeah, I think they're brilliant. I just think they're a brilliant company. Absolutely love them.
Did they have any requirements regarding Doctor Who? Did they? I mean, obviously they're doing the classic reprints as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they want this to be approachable to perhaps people who have barely heard of it.
Yes.
But have noticed.
The idea is to try and... get it out there to people that vaguely might have heard of the name Doctor Who in sort of sci-fi terms, but probably not even seen the show, and therefore the comic has to be accessible to those people as much as it has to be accessible to the people who know Doctor Who backwards.
I mean, I suppose it is a relatively easy concept. At its bare bones, the fact that it's a time traveller in a blue police box with a companion and he saves the world, you know, various worlds from themselves.
But it is a very easy concept when you're familiar with it.
Mm.
It's actually quite tricky. Having you know, done, obviously, books and audios and every other thing under the sun over the last 15 years about Doctor Who, it's very tricky to suddenly go, oh, I've got to write something, and you have to assume that people don't know the backstory. They don't know the history. They don't really know what's going on. And try and make it fit that market, which I've never had to do before, because all the time I've been writing books and producing audios and things like that, the market itself has always been the long-established market.
Mm.
I've not really done anything within new series territory. This is the first time I've ever written for the 10th Doctor. And so it is a different mindset you have to get into. You have to keep saying to yourself, whereas previously you could take everything for granted that everyone would know what a Dalek was and a Cyberman was and Gallifrey was.
Mm.
I'm now working on the assumption that they know nothing. And that's quite an interesting discipline to have, but I've never had it before.
But in a way, I suppose what Russell did in recent years kind of gives you a template, because
I assume that when he brought back Doctor Who with Rose, that he had to assume that a great deal of the audience were going to be watching it for the first time and just had vague memories of maybe, you know, their parents even, you know, watching it.
Yes, yes. And I know, I mean, templates of all kinds exist with Russell's stuff, and I like to think that, that everything I'm doing with IDW is very much fitting the Russell philosophy of Doctor Who.
Mm.
I think it has to. I think it's impossible to write for the 10th or even the 9th Doctor and not have at the back of your mind that Russell philosophy, because so much of his belief and his attitude towards Doctor Who shapes everything about those characters, and you couldn't write Rose, Martha, or Donna, or the 9th or 10th Doctor without having Russell's voice in your head, because he is so instrumental in creating those characters.
Mm.
Whereas he's obviously not remotely instrumental in creating anything that went before. And because there was so much of a sort of mess of pottage of different people putting their two penneth in for the first sort of eight Doctors, it's very easy to hit and miss with it. Whereas because everything here is so defined by one person's vision, it's easier to be able to say to yourself now and again, oh, no, that isn't what Russell would do, and change it.
Mm.
And I think that's genius. I mean, I don't just say that because he's my boss. one of the reasons I wanted to leave Big Finish and come and work up here was because I recognised genius and I wanted to work with it. I wanted to sort of, frankly, leech something off it. Because I think you don't very often get to work with people who have that much brain power and that much talent in their little finger, let alone inside their entire body. And I just think Russell's fantastic. I want and I hope that something of working with him has rubbed off and is coming out through the comic strip. Of course, when it all goes tits up and it turns out that I've missed the point completely and everyone goes, yeah, really what we want, then I'll get fired.
I think you're probably being disingenuous.
Yeah, you are. I'll get fired, I'll get shot.
The stories that you've got coming up in the comic, it's going to be a mixture of sort of new monsters and old monsters, because I see you're bringing the Sycorax back.
Yes, yeah, we've got Sycorax in episode one. We visit the cat kind homeworld in issue three. That's about it, really. I'm trying as I'm going along to sort of create some new stuff that's unique to the comics as well. So it's a potpourri, really. It's only six issues to start with, and they're individual issues. I mean, there's a sort of thread running through the issues that you pick up on now and again, and I wouldn't say all of that will be resolved by the end of those first six issues. But there's underlying stuff going on behind it, but also the issues are completely standalone. They're sort of self-contained 22-page stories.
Cool. Because I read that you'd plotted the first 24 should the first six sell by the bucket load. No, I think it's cool.
This is me going, I want a job for the next few years. I very much doubt I'll get it, because I think other writers and other better writers who will come along, and I think all I've done really is launch the thing.
Mm.
And then I think other people will come along and do other things.
Although
I very much doubt I'll get to 24. It should be lovely if I did, but I don't think I will.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if you did get to write the comic for the next 2 years, then presumably you'd also have to adapt to changes in the show as well.
Yes. Interesting. What would I do?
I mean, would you have to bring Donna in, you know?
Martha is my companion since I've been up here.
Mm.
And I know Freema, and it's very easy to write for her speech patterns. And I know Catherine, and I'd love Donna as a character as well. Actually, I just think Martha works really well in the comics.
Mm.
But I think it would be nice to get Donna in there at some point. Certainly, sort of, if I did carry on, this first six issues is definitely Dr. Martha. The next six issues is also definitely Dr. Martha, as I've planned it at the moment. If they turn around to me and say, oh, no, we want to put Donna in it, I can do, but it will take some restructuring, because I really like writing for Martha, and I've got sort of things worked out that Martha would do that maybe Donna wouldn't do in the same way that maybe Rose wouldn't do them.
Sure.
You know, it isn't just a case of transposing the name and putting a different picture in there. It is actually quite different the way one thing Russell's very good at is that the characters of the three companions he's done are incredibly
Hmm. What was it like writing a 22-page comic? Because you've written...
Difficult.
Right.
Really is. I haven't done it for about 10 years.
Hmm.
That's more than that. It's probably 15 years since I wrote for Marvel. I've forgotten how hard it is. So there you go. Yes, it's difficult. It's a challenge, and it's a completely different medium to anything else. Because it's that mixture of visual and writing. And it's a collaborative process, which book writing isn't. And it's not as collaborative as writing an audio script is. So it's just a wholly different medium to anything I'm used to before. And it's enormous fun, and I love it. But it is hard. It's the hardest thing I've ever written.
Because when you talk to different comics writers, obviously there are different styles of writing comics. There's sort of, I don't know, I guess the Alan Moore method, where you write a telephone directory and the artist has to just put every single thing in. Or there's like the Marvel method, where it's very much a collaboration between the writer and the artist.
Yeah, I think with the old style Marvel method, which was plot, artist would draw, writer would then script to picture.
Mm.
I think that's long since dead. I think even in Marvel now, they tend to work from full scripts. I'm very loose with my script. I'm very tight with my dialogue. I'm quite loose with my description, and a lot of it is, you know, I actually write, Nikki, what I really want here is to get this image across, or you know that bit from such and such a film. Well, it's something like that, and then this is what's going to happen in this panel, and here's the dialogue that goes with it. Because I think, you know, there's nothing worse than a writer completely dictating to an artist every angle, every look, every view. So I'm much prefer to give a sort of generic idea, and then they just see the dialogue and go, okay, well, we've got to make that fit. And then, of course, it comes back. Chris will send over the finished artwork and everything, and I go, right, well, I'll have to cut that word balloon down because it's obscuring half the picture because I wrote too much. So it's a nice collaborative thing.
So in a way, because you're also working on the TV show as well, it's not unlike that in the sense that Nick is kind of directing your script.
I think that's possibly that's an analogy. I don't think it's quite as straightforward as that because it's so very different. But yes, I suppose it's going along that way. It's more like storyboarding than actually directing.
Okay.
Because you get a chance to go back and go, actually, before you do it, let's do this.
And the first Doctor Who comics that you wrote has actually just been reprinted in one of the Death's Head books.
I know, I didn't even know about that. I saw a copy in a shop the other day and went, blimey, that's out again. But I phoned Marvel UK and said, oi, that's my copy, and I'm still waiting. yes, I was very, very proud to see that again, and all in colour.
Yeah. What was it like when
that
you...
That was my first ever comic. That was the first thing I ever wrote for comics.
Well, that was going to be my next question. What was it like writing comics for the first time back then?
I wrote and how much John Freeman wrote, because John was the editor and I didn't really know what I was doing. And I think, I mean, a lot of the dialogue is mine, certainly the story is all mine in that. I think a lot of the actual panel placement and maybe I wrote sort of 18 speech bubbles in one panel and he spread them around 6 or 7 panels when he actually got hold of the script. I learned a lot from the way John Freeman edited comics back then. I sort of thought, oh, I see how this works. He was a very good teacher. So yeah, that was my first thing, and then I did a few more things for DWN, which John then edited, and I learned a lot from that. And now I'm sort of hopefully doing it right without too much editing from Chris. Poor man. Probably every time he gets the script goes, oh God, how much dialogue has this guy written?
Because you've also, it's been the other way around, that you've edited Doctor Who magazine and commissioned comics of other people. I mean, when you were doing that, did you sort of have an idea of where the comic was going to go? Because I think while you were editing the magazine, it started to become sort of like a crossover between the new adventures and gave...
I inherited the Benny idea, and I ran with that, I suppose, for a year, maybe a year and a half. And then what I was far more interested in was getting out of the rut of doing Seventh Doctor strips, and I introduced the idea of doing Past Doctor strips because I think Virgin had launched their Missing Adventures at that point, and I thought, yeah, that's actually quite an interesting thing to do. The one thing Marvel had never done was Hartnell strips and Trouton strips and Pertwee strips, and it was And I made sure, I think, everything was just three parts, so that, you know, you only had to have three issues if you didn't like a particular doctor, and then something else would come along.
But at the same time, the past Doctor strips that you commissioned, they had the sort of ongoing plot line of the Threshold as the reoccurring bad guys.
No, they didn't.
Oh, they didn't?
Not under me.
Oh, that was after your time.
That was Gary Gillett. No, nothing like that at all under me. All my stuff that I commissioned was absolutely standalone.
Right.
I would never have thought of doing arcs. That wasn't where I was back then. I would do it now, and I think Gary did the right thing by doing so. But no, none of that was ever in anything of mine.
So it really was just the case of you wanted to see missing adventures, but drawn by artists that you like.
The readers would as well. And this is a point in Doctor Who magazine when I turned the magazine very much into a reference work rather than a forward-looking work, because I wasn't much to look forward to at that point. We didn't even know about the TV movie.
Sure.
So being retrospective was, I thought, the right direction to take the strip in, simply because it hadn't been done before. And I think, you know, Gary quite wisely, probably about a year after he started, then, because the McGann movie came along, it was a really good opportunity to go, right, now we'll just go back to the Eighth Doctor and go forward. I think he finished Seventh Doctor, didn't he? Because he did the killing off of Ace and everything.
Yeah.
But basically, it was to set up his Eighth Doctor stuff. And that was the right choice, because by then you had a new Doctor. But for my run, it was just, you know, it was pointless constantly just doing the Seventh Doctor. It was more fun to spread it around a bit.
Because the second comic strip that you wrote was Fourth Doctor with Sarah Jane Smith and Harry Sullivan.
Yes, not my finest moment. I wrote that very soon after being kicked out of Marvel, and I think Gary and Scott Gray commissioned it as a sort of, oh God, look, what can we do to help Gary? Which is very nice of them. Black Death, I think it was called.
Yeah, Black Destiny.
Completely rewritten by Scott Gray, and quite right too.
Okay.
It wasn't a very good strip that I wrote, and it was a much better strip when he finished it. I learned a lot, actually, from that.
I learned
a lot from that, because I learned what I'd done wrong.
Right.
And so at the time, I was thinking, well, why has Scott rewritten this? And then when it was published, and I looked at what he'd rewritten, and I looked at what I'd written, I thought, okay, yes, I can see why he's done that. Oh, I can see that's much better. Oh, shame that he changed that, but actually, I can see that probably works visually better. And I learned a lot. I mean, Scott was a brilliant writer. He's also a very, very good editor. He really understands the comics medium probably better than most other people in Britain, frankly, who are comic editors. He's an undervalued talent, is Scott Gray. And he was very, very good on the Doctor Who strip. And frankly, I didn't argue with him at all. When he turned around to me and said, we've rewritten this and done this and done this, I was like, yeah, absolutely. on the nose.
In so much as starting to write that strip was doing a visual missing adventure for the Fourth Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith, something that you'd wanted to do for a while.
The reason I can't remember why I did the Fourth Doctor, given to me, because it's my least favourite Doctor of all.
Okay.
Or it may have been me going, you know what, I want a challenge. I want to try and write for a Doctor I'm not very keen on, which may have been the problem. I honestly can't remember. I think they said... do a strip and do a Tom Baker. I think, actually, if I remember rightly, they said do a strip with Tom Baker and Sarah, and I said, can I put Harry in it? Because I thought that would be a more interesting combination. But that, you know, I think everything was... I know the idea of doing it in Russia was mine. I think they gave me Fourth Doctor and Sarah and said, that's what I want your strip to be, which is exactly what I did to other people. You know, I'd always say, oh, Brixie, can you do me a First Doctor and Ben and Polly, or Gareth, will you do me Tegan Turlough and Davison and Stuck Cows on the Moon on it, you know, that kind of thing. So I would always give people what I wanted from the strip, and I think Gary and Scott were just following that and gave me Tom Baker.
Okay. I mean, a different kind of challenge must have been the Doctor Who comic strip you did for the Radio Times.
Oh, I loved that. Absolutely loved that. That was an enormous challenge, because suddenly you're going, oh my God, I've only got 6 panels to tell a story each week and end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant challenge. I love challenges, you see. I love it when someone gives you something to do that you've never done before, and it has to fit certain formats, and you've got quite an inflexible format, And I was lucky I was working with Lee Sullivan, and, you know, you can't have better collaboration on something with that kind of turnaround than Lee. He's fantastic. That was enormous fun, and working with Radio Times was fun as well, because they gave me complete carte blanche. I think of everything I'd written comic-wise up to that point, that was the most fun I had. Because you know, my non-Doctor Who stuff, I'd enjoyed it. But this was the first time I'd written something I was immensely proud of, and I do love those Radio Times strips. I think they're really good. I wish someone would reprint them and get them out there in sort of collected format. We hadn't ended when we ended. I was very disappointed when it came to an end, because it was so abrupt.
Well, I noticed that you're letting people read them for free over the internet now.
Oh, are they up for somewhere? Yes. That rings a bell. Somebody's saying, oh, can I put them up? And I said, yeah, if you fuck sort it out with Lee, because I wouldn't have said yes without them getting Lee's permission.
Sure.
But yes, but I think they're brilliant. I'm an optimist. Brilliant from the point of view I wrote them. I think the actual concept of them is brilliant. I think it's a lovely idea. I love newspaper strips as well.
Mm.
The old sort of James Bond and Jeff Hawke sort of three panel strips. That's a real art form to write a daily punchy cliffhanger every three panels. Wow. I did one every six panels. And that was hard enough. But yes, that stuff I really liked.
If they ever did reprint them together, would you write the rest of the story to finish it off?
If somebody asked me to, yes, I would. I would happily treat those two last issues coda thing as exactly what they are and say, look, here's actually what got printed, stick it at the back. But I'd love to write the other 12 parts? No, the two more stories of, God, how many weeks did each of them run?
I think you did 42 in total, so it must have been 4 10-part stories and 1 2-part.
Right, so there'd be another 20 episodes to go.
Cool.
Because I know Lee drew, because I wrote the first one of them anyway, though whether I still got it, I don't know, probably haven't. But yes, I probably wrote the first four weeks worth of the next story, and Lee certainly drew one of them. I think DWM reprinted it without speech bubbles on it. So yes, it would be fun, but I'd want to do it with Lee. I wouldn't really want to do it with someone else. I think, you know, for the coherency of it, to sit down with Lee and finish that storyline off would be brilliant.
Because you brought Stacey and Sard back in your novel Placebo Effect.
Really? Mad old pizza AR. How fantastic is an Earth girl marrying an ice warrior? What's she doing marrying an ice warrior? Kind of relationship with Egan. I love Ice Warriors. I just thought, yeah, I love the idea of the ultimate interracial marriage. I thought, you know, let's have fun with that. So yes, when I got the chance to do it in a novel, I was quite happy to bring them in and indeed make the interracial marriage a huge plot point in the book as well, even when I was going through a very anti-religion phase.
Right.
It was like, yes, let's expose all these hypocritical right-wing Bible Belt Americans, which is probably a grossly unfair representation of the book, but that's where I was at that point in my life. I'm thinking, yeah, let's screw you, and let's use Stacey and Sard, who are these two characters I really liked, as the sort of inspiration for this hatred that was being aimed at them.
Well, I mean, in whatever format it's been in, Doctor Who has quite often been very anti-establishment. I mean, you've been creating different kinds of Doctor Who in various formats for a couple of decades now, almost. The audiovisuals, Big Finish, the books. But when did you first become aware of the comic strip? Did you ever read TV comic, or was it just when it first started?
Yeah. Not so much TV. I remember Countdown and TV Action.
Okay.
Which I never owned at the time, but I read. I read a friend's copy at school. Do you know, to be honest, I suppose my first real introduction to Doctor Who comic strip is actually the 1969 Doctor Who annual, a really brilliant one with Jamie and the Doctor hiding from Cyberman on the front, that bursting into the TARDIS.
Okay.
Which I think is just for nostalgic reasons, is the best Doctor Who annual in the history of the universe.
Okay.
And some of the comic strips in there, and that was probably the first time I'd realised that, you know, Doctor Who existed in comic strip form.
Mm.
And those comic strips, I love. God, they were brilliant. So, yes, I never bothered with TV comic at all. Countdown and then TV Action appealed to me because any UFO in it. And it had that brilliant strip based on 2001, which is drawn by John M. Burns, and I could sit and watch you read comics, Gary. I could read John M. Burns' artwork. I think you read artwork. I can't even speak sense this morning, but you know what I mean.
No, I think
I
you can.
Read
yeah.
A strip drawn by John M. Burns all my life quite happily.
Mm.
So TV Action Countdown I loved. I never bought them, but people at school did, so I would ruthlessly steal their copies and read them and hand them back a bit tatty. And then I started, obviously, Doctor Who Weekly Issue 1. From that point on, I had every single thing, and I loved those strips. I remember not liking Bizarrely Now. I think it's fantastic. At the time, not really liking Iron Legion as a strip. And then City of the Damned came along, I was like, yes, that's fantastic. That's brilliant. But yes, Iron Legion always struck me as being a bit weird. I don't know why. I think it's because somebody dies in the very first panel, the very first page, the little shopkeeper gets shot. And I remember thinking, oh, that's not like Doctor Who. Gun people down in Doctor Who with bullets.
Not yet.
Beans going everywhere. just one of those funny little things at the back of your mind that just turns you off a strip completely.
Mm.
But yes, Pretty the Cursed onwards, I just thought was fantastic. And God, there's some stuff. Junkyard Demon, possibly one of the greatest Doctor Who comic strips ever. And Mike McMahon's artwork just inspired me so much. And indeed, years later, when I sort of... can I say I discovered Adrian Salmon? I don't know. I probably...
Rediscover.
A break. And that was because I was looking at Adrian's stuff and it reminded me of Mike McMahon so much. And actually, their style is completely different, but there was something in the exaggeration of it and something in the sort of almost 50s, like those beautiful Soviet posters. And there was something in the way that Mike McMahon drew the side of the leader and Adrian Salmon drew Sidemen and things like that. I just loved. I just think that's such brilliant artwork. I really want to work with Adrian again. I'd love it if I could get him onto doing something for IDW, because I think Adrian's got so much to offer strip-wise.
Mm.
And I think, you know, he very rarely gets a chance to do a strip. He's just done one in the new DWM, and you just look at it and go, it's just pure class, pure genius, that strip.
Well, I mean, talking about that, his work seems to have taken a slightly painterly quality now as well. Which, you know, it's nice to see it evolving.
Yes, and it's because Adrian's doing his own colouring. You know, for years he was drawing black and white, a lot of people would colour, and now he's doing his own colouring, he's probably doing his own lettering as well. I mean, I think Adrian's a bit of a one-man army.
Mm.
And he's just a genius. Just fantastic. Very talented, very clever. Fun to work with as well. And it's why, when I was a big Finish, I used him for the Benny colours.
Yeah.
Because he was just a nice bloke to work with.
I mean, talking of being a Doctor Who fan myself... When I got into Doctor Who, it wasn't so much Doctor Who on TV. It was the Fifth Doctor and Sixth Doctor comics in the magazine, which I thought were brilliant, and had sort of, you know, greater imagination than a lot of what was on TV at the time.
Well, you can't beat Tides of Time, can you? I mean, you could never have done that on television, and that's where comic strips come into the road. But Tides of Time and Voyager are things that you can see Alan McKenzie's editor was going, I want to do an epic that could never be made on television. And a problem with a lot of comics is, yes, they do alien planets and alien monsters, is where just stories are quite feasible within the TV production, and I'm as guilty of that as anyone else is. And I think, you know, Tides of Time and Voyager absolutely could never be made. You couldn't make them. You have a hard job making them on a film nowadays with the CGI and everything. There's something about the breadth of imagination and the beauty of the artwork, both Dave Gibbons' entire time and God, Ridgway's beautiful stuff on Voyager. Just untouched. Amazing. And the shame of Voyager is so many times it's been reprinted over the years in colour.
Right.
If ever there was a strip that should never have been seen in colour is Voyager. John Ridgway is a fantastic black and white artist. And I always think his stuff looks a bit in colour, because he draws for the black and white medium, and the moment someone colours it up, however good the colouring is, Because you can't colour that stuff up. It's a work of art in its own right.
So the sort of answering what you just said, the comics that you're doing now, you're taking opportunity of the $1 million budget that a comic has.
Yes, I worry sometimes I'm not taking it enough, but then it's a bit like when I was at Big Finish and I used to say to people, you know, yes, you could on audio have 10,000 Daleks coming over the hill, but it doesn't tell a very good story, does it? And there's still parts of Doctor Who that doesn't actually need to spend $1 million to tell a good story. So it's splitting the difference, I think, between the two. It's nice to have the scope, but you don't actually need it every single 5 minutes. Sometimes two people having a conversation works just as well on comics as it does on television, because it's about what the story needs, not what the not trying to say, ooh, we've got a big budget. What I think the comics that IDW have given me is the opportunity to go to alien worlds, which we don't do very often on TV. I've only had one set on Earth so far, and in fact, I'm just about to write another one set on Earth, but both my ones set on Earth are set in the past, and they're 20th century past, they're not sort of big historical past. Everything else is on alien planets, and I think that's the duty, if you like, of the comic, is to at least explore the alienness of Doctor Who.
Cool. Alright, I think that'll do nicely.
On next week's show, I'm looking at up-and-coming comic writers and artists. I'll be talking to Ollie Smith and Oliver Lambden about their work and the selling of homemade comics at the Camden Market comic stall. And after that, I'm talking to the winners of the Pride in Manga, Manga Jiman, competition in a trio of interviews recorded at the Japanese Embassy at the launch of the accompanying exhibition. If you'd like to hear my interview with Gary again, you can download it and many other podcasts, including my interviews with other Doctor Who comic writers such as Pat Mills and Alan Moore, at www.panelborders.com. And if you'd like to leave a comment, click on the link marked blog.